Right, good day and welcome to yet another edition of the Citizen Talk. This is a platform where we invite different people to come and unpack some of the most difficult issues facing us as South Africans. Now, talking about challenges, many South Africans are currently going through one of the most difficult periods and challenges. And while load shedding remains a big crisis, it is just the general level of service delivery which makes things even more difficult. If it is not garbage that is not being collected, citizens are also complaining about the deteriorating state of our roads thanks to the potholes that we see every now and then. Now, we decided to invite an expert in this field to come and, you know, help us understand some of the most, you know, complex and difficult issues facing local government. And when we talk about local government, we can talk about, you know, a whole lot of local municipalities that are actually on the verge of collapse, or some are already, you know, reached that stage. And Pranish Desai is from the organization called Good Governance Africa, and he's here to help us unpack some of the most difficult challenges that we are facing as a country. Thank you so much, Pranish, for your time, and welcome to the Citizen Talk.
Good morning, Stephen, and thanks for the invite. I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you so much once again. Firstly, how would you describe the state of local government when you look at the different municipalities that we have, you know, the challenges that they are faced with? How would you, you know, just describe the situation in the country currently?
So in the SONA address last week, yep, the president said that around 150 out of the 250 municipalities in South Africa are currently in distress or disarray or having some major issues with regards to service delivery, financial misadministration, all these problems. So clearly the current state is not at a standard that we'd like it, and it's basically unacceptable. At Good Governance Aqua, we have something called the Governance Performance Index, which scores and ranks the municipalities in South Africa, especially the 205 local municipalities, according to three categories: administration, service delivery, which we give the most weight to, and planning and monitoring.
Sure.
What we see, and I think you find this not only in local government, but government across South Africa as a whole, the planning part's actually pretty good. There are these plans, the IDPs, municipalities have them, and that. Service delivery is somewhere in between. We've seen quite a lot of improvement in service delivery compared to where the country was in 94, but the pace has slowed down rapidly over the last 15 years. So a lot of that progress is 94 to 2009-10, and not that much after.
And why did it start, you know, slowing down, that pace of ensuring quality service delivery to the residents?
So there are many reasons for why it's been struggling. But corruption is a big one. So in that same GPI, Governance Performance Index, we have the administration category, and that considers financial administration, things like the age reports and corruption. Corruption's on the rise. And, you know, municipal budgets are already under strain, but when you add corruption to that, that means there's less money to spend on what you actually need to spend it on, because A, you're already under strain, but B, a lot of it just being diverted to things it shouldn't be diverted to. So that has an impact. It means you can't refurbish your service delivery supply chains. It means you can't refurbish the infrastructure. It means that, you know, even if you don't have the infrastructure, you can't really build it now.
Absolutely.
You can't staff your municipalities because you can't pay them. So that's all having an impact, an accumulated impact. And that now, more recently, what we've seen is in the era of coalition government, that's having an impact on outcomes in service delivery, especially in big cities like Johannesburg, as we're seeing now, Tswane. And the impact that has is that there's more political uncertainty added to the mix now, which means that different political parties are trying to barter for positions or influence and their own agendas and ideologies at times. But there's also an element of, you know, corruption in this as well, in that demands are met and there's this notion that, you know, we'd all like to eat, which is just counterproductive to good policymaking. So the current coalition framework in South Africa, which is quite lacking, it's very weak, that's contributing to the fact that there's a lot of uncertainty in the system as well.
And it's interesting. I mean, you talk about this whole issue of coalition governments. You know, when you listen to particularly politicians coming from the ANC, they will say to you, but there's no, you know, sign or clue that that says that, you know, this instability, political instability that we're seeing in these metros or municipalities, you know, are actually, you know, worsening the situation when it comes to service delivery. Your take on that?
So political parties across the board share a lot of the blame for the way the coalition's problem is managed. While there's understandably a lot of anger from, especially from certain parts of society towards the ANC, it's still the fact that they are, according to voters, the biggest party.
Sure.
And so, you know, coalitions, even if you're not giving them a majority, means that they have to play some role.
Mm.
It's almost impossible to do it without them.
Sure.
And opposition parties have tried to exclude them often. And even with corruption problems and that might not be the best for stability, because you're then angering, basically making a bigger party than you angry.
Mm.
And so they'll just keep pushing motions of no confidence in you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you suffer and citizens suffer. At the same time, the ANC needs to come to terms with the fact that this is not 1994, 99, or 2004 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The country is different. The priorities of people are different. And also the people who are voting are different.
Sure.
Everyone, I think, does acknowledge the historical influence of the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
But younger voters, especially the ones under 30, have no conscious memory of apartheid. They,
mm-hmm.
they have no point of reference. All they've ever really known is ANC government nationally, ANC government provincially, ANC government locally. And that's tens of millions of people now. And they're beginning to be able to vote now.
Sure.
And you'll start seeing that reflect in preferences.
Mm.
So the system itself is weak. So political parties aren't necessarily to blame for that.
Yeah.
But they've made it undoubtedly worse, and citizens are harmed as a result.
Mm. It's almost as if, you know, everyone else involved was not prepared, you know, for such an arrangement, you know, of, you know, having a coalition agreement or government in place.
No, so South Africa basically lacks a regulatory framework or even a, you know, normative or an ideal framework. What ought coalitions to look like?
Sure.
And that's a problem.
Wow.
Now, it's true that coalitions are a political process. Those are hard to regulate. We all know that. But is our current framework setting South Africa the best way possible to deal with these problems in a way that, you know, benefits citizens, meets their desires? I don't think it is. You have things like, for instance, in the Municipal Structures Act.
Mm.
It does recognize that to some degree the presence of coalitions on that.
Mm.
It's more in terms of something like 14 days after an election, there has to be an election of a council speaker or a municipal council or something. So there has to be some resolution from that election.
Mm.
That doesn't really leave you much time for actual bartering between parties and that.
Mm.
On the other hand, parties also exploit this by not doing things like publishing coalition agreements, which means that there's nothing for citizens or civic society or businesses or whoever's interested to bind them to the, you know, agreements that they're making secretly.
Mm.
There needs to be a level of transparency to this process. And, you know, currently the coalition's problem is mainly at the local level, but soon it'll be at the provincial and especially the national level.
Yeah.
And the other aspect is that, you know, democracy relies as much as on anything as the confidence citizens have in it. And, you know, if it's high-profile cities and high-profile coalitions like Johannesburg, Tshwane, that are failing, and 40% of the country lives in these metropolitan municipalities, only 8 of them in the country. If they have a negative view of coalitions, then your entire political future looks a lot more worse from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Is this what we're going to get nationally as well? Mm. All this infighting and, you know, governments lasting 6 months.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I mean, you've heard also in my introduction, you know, saying that it's not only the load shedding crisis headache that we are forced to live with. It's just, you know, looking at the general level of service delivery. I mean, you can see it also with the protest actions that we see across, you know, different parts of the country. People are just unhappy. They are just hurtful, to put it bluntly, you know, about the poor service delivery that they experience. Now, when one looks at you know, the level of service delivery, and we've done in recent years, you know, we visited a number of provinces, you know, you can name them Northwest, the Free State. The situation looks very dire. Now, which of the provinces, according to you, looks to be the most problematic when it comes to service delivery?
So, you know, South Africa's history still plays a role.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Gauteng and the Western Cape tend to do better on these things. Mm. And it's not only good governance and effective governance.
Sure.
That, there are parts of that. But you see municipalities in the KZN which really make an effort and they stand out. And that's, you know, historically deprived part of the country.
Sure.
In terms of countries which are doing less well in terms of service delivery, I think that the, you know, headline ones are Eastern Cape, Northwest, Limpopo and KZN.
Mm.
Part of the problem in these places is basically that the infrastructure there for, you know, delivering water, piped water to households, whether it's in the house or a tap outside or whatever, it's just not there.
Mm.
Providing electricity, connecting houses to the grid, which despite the load shedding problems, you know, you at least want them connected to the grid. Not the infrastructure isn't there as much. Sanitation. Making sure that there's dignity and people aren't using bucket toilets as a normal course of action.
Mm.
There just isn't as much of this in these provinces. And that's not only a local government problem. That's also because national and especially provincial governments have not, and it's again linked to corruption.
Mm.
Budgets are already tight, but a lot of it's just being badly spent or spent in a way that's not productive for citizens and so that they can see in their own lifetimes, hey, look, 5 years ago I didn't have this, but now I have this, and with that my child can now go to school and, you know, study effectively, or I can provide for my family, or, you know, I can just enjoy basic things that, you know, make life easier.
Yeah, yeah. And talking about corruption, I mean, it's a serious pandemic. Let's say, for instance, a certain municipality receives a budget, let's say 100% budget. Now, when money gets stolen, out of that 100%, you know, just in layman's terms, how much of that 100% budget, you know, just vanishes into thin air?
So with the AG terminology, these things can be quite tricky.
Yeah.
One thing to, you know about this is that not all of the money that's wasted is necessarily corrupt.
Yeah.
A lot of it's also just bad management itself. So eliminating corruption and bad management of this are the two things to tackle on. What the AG tends to find is that across municipalities, there's around 20 billion rand annually over the last 5 years that's out of the irregular or wasteful. And that's a lot of money that that could have been gone to other things. And, you know, that trend's not changing right now.
Yeah. Despite the calls for, you know, consequence management, it doesn't appear as if that problem is going away.
No, it's not on current evidence.
Mm.
And, you know, the instability and uncertainty in especially high-profile metros now, that'll worsen it. Because if you don't have a clear idea of who's in, who's making the political decisions, sometimes for the, you know, bureaucrats or the guys in the municipal offices, managers or whoever, financial officers, they don't know what to authorize and what not to. That increases the likelihood that mistakes will be made. And some of it is just mistakes.
Yeah.
And that. So as a whole, our system is not, local government system is not performing well. And corruption and bad financial management is a big part of that.
Is it also because, when talking about bad management, is it also because of, you know, the deployment of wrong people in the most critical positions?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of that. So sometimes it is basic things of how everyone in their life at some point over-budgeted for something or under-budgeted for something and had to overspend. And it just, because it's at a government level, it aggregates. But somewhere it's also definitely that there is a lacking of, you know, basic financial accountancy abilities in a lot of these departments. You know, I recently did an interview with you about the professionalization of the workforce, civil service in the country. And one thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know, there are hints of applying a lot of that to local government, but it's not being made the priority. A lot of the attention's on high level DGs of national departments, yeah. Not as much on
local.
You know, who's the guy who's, you know, looking, counting the coins at a municipality. And it needs to be across the board if you really want to see improvement, because you know, you can have the best DG in the world at a place, but if 50 municipalities in across the provinces don't have these basic skills, then that's a lot more people also just suffering.
And talking about those municipalities, I mean, that's now government at the lowest level. We've seen over the years, you know, some form of intervention coming from either province or, you know, national government to say, for instance, if a certain municipality is failing, you know, in its duties, we'd rather place it under administration. And you'll correct me if I'm wrong. In my own understanding is that before you can arrive at a decision to place a certain municipality under administration, you must have at least province at provincial level. They should have intervened, right? And if they maybe flag something wrong, you tell the guys at the local municipality, but no, this is not how things should be done. Let's do this. But you know that once you have failed in all your attempts at the provincial level, that's when national government kicks in. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's correct. Part of the reason why the national role has become a lot more prominent is that we have one province in particular where a lot more municipalities seem to be going under administration. That's the Northwest. So I think a few years ago, there was a point where out of the 17 local municipalities in that province, around 10 were under administration. That raises questions at the provincial level then as well, because that's a very high rate of failing to that extent.
I mean, you can go as far as asking, do we even need provinces or provincial governments to start with?
Yeah, there's sometimes when suggesting solutions, you're quite skeptical of whether the politics will just allow for it. So it's a valuable question to ask, but we probably are stuck with provinces.
Because, I think, like you say, it's a valid question to ask, because one would expect that provincial government's role would be to provide oversight, you know, over these municipalities.
Absolutely.
But it, over the years, it doesn't seem to have been working.
No, it is not working well.
Yeah. And why do you feel, what do you think also, I mean, having placed so many municipalities under administration, that intervention still doesn't work? In fact, the situation seems to be worsening. What could be the reason for that?
So even if everything was being done right, it still takes time to improve things. Governance, good governance, it's much easier to build, I mean, much harder to build something up than it is to tear it down through corruption or bad management or whatever. So there's just an element of that. But, you know, a lack of sustained political will, that's a factor. Diversion of resources and that deep-rooted corruption means that often to try and resolve things, you might have to end up dealing with many of the people implicated in the same things in the first place. And that the lack of an ability to recruit adequately, that plays a role. If you are, you know, having to suspend multiple officials across municipalities in a province, who are you putting in place? And these are all questions that are entirely legitimate. But when resolving the problem, you know, creating new ones in and of itself.
Now, talking about these municipalities that have collapsed, what recourse is there, you know, for an ordinary member of the public out there, say, who, for instance, is sitting today without electricity, without water for the past 2 months? In fact, there are people who've even gone for a year without electricity. What can they do to ensure that, you know, the services, those basic services, are indeed delivered to them by government?
Citizenship and being a citizen is hard, especially in democracy.
Yeah.
But that's partly why so much was sacrificed to get us to this point. And it should not be viewed as a once in a 5 years or once in a 2.5 years thing. So understandably, people in that situation will be very angry and have every right to be. In terms of getting things done on that.
Yeah.
It requires you to go out of your way to put pressure on, you know, the officials themselves there. If the problem might be a lack of provincial and national support, banding together with communities, playing an active role in getting your communities together to play, to gain their attention. Some of it you do see this expressed in protest.
Yeah.
And that. But it's basically the only way to really sustain action and attention to get, you know, your leaders or your elected leaders who are supposed to be representing you to pay attention to you.
Absolutely.
You know, at the end of the day, there's no fix that does not involve an active citizenship.
Yeah. Wow. Folks, if you've just joined us, we are in conversation with Pranish Desai. He's from an organization called Good Governance Africa. Now, Pranish, we've been sort of, you know, going through the different, you know, levels of governance, you know, from local, provincial, national. And I even made an example about, you know, certain municipalities having been placed under administration. But then you ask yourself that, you know, perhaps that should be the last resort to even place a municipality under, you know, administration, unless, you know, a province comes up with a good intervention of some sort. Now, what's the problem in your view at national level?
So, specifically regarding national level support of local governments,
yes.
I think there has been a lack of sustained political will to try and resolve these problems. You know, while it's understandable, like I said, given the history that certain parts of the country require more attention than others, the question then becomes, have we been making as much progress with each passing year as we thought we had been? And I think, yeah, like I said earlier, between the 1994 and 2009 period, I think by and large the government could actually claim that pretty legitimately. People did see a difference in their lives.
Sure.
Communities and towns that had never had electricity or piped water had them for the first time ever. That's actually improving people's lives. Since then, corruption nationally, corruption locally has made things worse. There are a lot of these plans. Like I said, the planning's one problem in South Africa is not necessarily a lack of planning.
Yeah. And you know why I'm actually asking you for your comment on, you know, what you think of national, you know, government. A case in example, look at what was announced during the State of the Nation address last week pertaining to the electricity, you know, crisis. Now, a new ministry for electricity, which will be based in the president's office. That clearly, for me personally, is a sign that you don't have confidence in your current minister of energy and your current minister of public enterprise. Why the need for an additional ministry? It's you just keep on increasing, you know, your already bloated civil service.
Yeah, so there's a good interpretation of the government's intention of this and a bad one.
Yeah.
The good one might be that before SONA, there was a lot of news reports about how the presidency, and you know, he's really increased the size of this presidency.
Yeah.
How they're getting frustrated with government departments being really slow to implement. And they were calling heads of departments or DGs or, you know, the officials here to just try and speed things up with regard to energy procurement and this entire plan that they have.
Yeah.
And that, and maybe, you know, in a good interpretation of the government and the president's intentions, this person would just be the political driver behind this. So you'd get someone who's, you know, capable of making hard choices effectively, quickly, and that and really applying pressure on people.
Sure.
That's a good interpretation. The bad one is, yeah, he mistrusts his ministers. He mistrusts his party as a whole. He mistrusts government departments. On the whole, the president, his advisors, the super presidency, basically, thinks that government's quite slow and sluggish, thinks that parliament's not working optimally, and thinks that, you know, the ANC's political problems are just too much, and also maybe there's a lack of the right sort of people who didn't want to fill that position.
Interesting word that you raised there, mistrust, you know, between the president and some of his cabinet ministers. That should be a worrying factor then. And if you have serious concerns as a leader, why not address that problem directly?
Yeah.
Instead of going, you know, around the bush, then you come up with a new ministry thinking that it's going to solve our energy crisis?
Yeah. So with some respect, we have to empathize with the fact that this is a hard job. governing anywhere in the world is a hard job. Leading a party as big historically and you know, as varied as the ANC is a hard job. But there's certain levels to this, and there's certain levels that we should not accept. Mm. So just moving away slightly from the Minister of Electricity post.
Yeah.
In that interview I did with you, we discussed the fact that we've gone without a permanent minister for the Department of Public Service Administration for 10 months. I don't think that's acceptable.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, the problems can be so intractable that for 10 months you just can't find a person who can fill that position. And if they are that intractable, then that does raise serious questions that citizens are increasingly having about, you know, do we trust the ANC fully next time? Do we want an ANC with a coalition, or do we want an opposition coalition of parties? I think it's entirely legitimate if the country keeps having to wait for, you know, relatively simpler things like filling a vacant cabinet post because your minister's been sent to the World Bank. And it's 10 months now. And, you know, you have things like this professionalization framework for the public services. Where's the political will going to come from if you haven't got a permanent minister there?
And let's say, for instance, in the event that you are a leader, you're looking for somebody else, you know, to sort of fill that vacant cabinet post, and you don't find someone from within your party. I mean, surely there's nothing that, you know, can stop you as a leader, you know, from sort of sourcing someone from outside your party, right?
There isn't. And to give Ramaphosa some credit, after the 2019 election, he did reach out to Patricia Delol and give her the Department of Public Works. So he's shown some capacity to this. The issue then is this just an ANC problem? Will they find that unacceptable? The other option would be to, you know, appoint someone outside of parliament altogether, but I think you're only allowed two in the cabinet at one point in time, people you can appoint out of the cabinet, and those two positions are already full.
Sure.
So he'd have to, you know, try and find. He'd basically have to create another vacancy that he'd have to fill if he wants to bring someone out of parliament. He doesn't trust any of the parties and then. So, you know, reaching out to if he really thinks highly of a person in one of these other parties, then there's no reason why he should not reach out. And I also think it shows a measure of wisdom, pragmatism, leadership. In his son address, he quoted Mandela at the end.
Yeah.
And Mandela recognized, and Ramaphosa will know this better than a lot of people, the importance of dealing with even your political opponents. And I frankly don't think that the problems of today in terms of how much political parties have a right to dislike or even in some cases hate each other can even remotely compare to what was the case between 1990 and 1994, for example. You know, and there, what happened after the 1994 election, the very party which had propped up apartheid for 50 years went into government with the party which had played a big role in liberating South Africa for it. And not only that, you had pretty big concessions made to KwaZulu-Natal and the presence of the IFP in that same government of national coalition. Unity. And that was constitutionally written in. What Ramaphosa doesn't need to do is not even on the same scale in terms of finding a way to bring another person in. But it will just show leadership. If he thinks that the best person for that job is outside his party but in parliament, to offer it to that person.
Absolutely. And I mean, when one also takes into consideration the big challenges that we face as a country, it's not one single person who can fix, you know, all those problems, right? You sort of need a collective, you know, even if it means working with, you know, your opposition parties, let it be.
Yeah. And that's also where the country's heading.
Yeah.
Coalitions.
Yeah. And talking about the coalitions, I mean, you know, the signs are just becoming clearer and clearer day by day that the ANC is actually likely to get less than 50% of the vote in the much anticipated general election next year, 2024. Now, with what we've been experiencing in the coalition agreements or arrangements, you know, that came about as a result of the previous local government elections, going into 2024, general elections, with that possibility of the ANC getting less than 50%, and, you know, the likelihood of us having another, you know, a coalition sort of arrangement at the national level. How possible is or what can be done to ensure that, you know, whatever coalition that's entered into agreement next year, post the elections, will actually work to the benefit of citizens?
So, you know, there are a couple of scenarios here, basically, but quickly,
yeah.
The ANC just managed to narrowly hold on to that majority nationally. Then there's a sort of middle way where they, between 45 and 50,
yeah.
around about what they got in the last local elections, and they can just rely on smaller parties.
Mm.
Then there's the below ANC below 45 framework, and that's much less uncertain.
Yeah.
There, if the future government contains ANC, it will probably have to make a choice between either the EFF and the DA as a coalition partner.
Mm.
And not only that, if it's there, then it means that Gauteng and KZN are almost certainly going to be in similar situations to what Johannesburg currently is in, where there's no party with more than 33, 34, 35. Mm. And I think whatever happens, Gauteng and the KZN are going to be coalitions after next year. I'm not completely sure yet whether the ANC will dip below 50.
50, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that there's quite a lot of research actually and important stakeholders like South African Local Government Association, SALGA, and the Mapungubwe Institute of Strategic Reflection, Mistra. They've put out, you know, frameworks or coalitions and that. But it's just not really had an effect on the behavior of political parties themselves.
Mm.
So one thing my organization, Good Governance Africa, is calling for is to say that the president should appoint you know, an independent task team or special panel to look at these problems and see if, you know, we can make these revisions that are necessary to the national legislative framework on coalitions, for the framework for local government on coalitions, make sure that there's a way to get them stable. And, you know, there'll be a common criticism from citizens that, you know, what will another task force do?
Mm.
Unfortunately, the choice is either between doing it that way and having that informal process which Parliament then addresses, or you leave it to the political parties themselves.
Mm.
And I don't think that political parties are trusted to and should be trusted to do this themselves.
Yeah. Given the recent, you know, history. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, coalitions are hard to legislate for, but even if they can provide, you know, a framework that's basic legislation. So, you know, increasing the time within which you can publish an agreement and then making sure that they do publish the agreements as well, making sure that happens. But then at the same time, you know, you need to create a political culture where parties are willing to collaborate in a productive way.
Yeah.
And to do that, there's no ways it can happen without citizens, businesses, you know, local communities, civic society as a whole, finding a way to keep applying pressure on the political parties so that they can change their incentives. Because, say, if I'm the leader of the EFF right now or the leader of one of these parties, it's quite likely that I might be making the same choices they're making, which is go with the DA to keep the ANC out and then go with the ANC to knock the DA out, increase my leverage, become the kingmaker. Do the same thing that the Patriotic Alliance is doing. It's quite possible that I'd be doing these sorts of things. But, and that's a sign that the incentive structure in the system itself has a problem. And you know, a presidential commission might be one way where you can grant legitimacy to this excellent research that's already out there.
Yeah.
But political parties just haven't been paying attention to.
Mm. And talk to me more about, you know, having provided that framework, right? In terms of, you know, timelines, let's say the elections just happened now. The results are out. No one, you know, got an outright majority. Therefore, we need to now start enter, you know, into coalition discussions. And we enter into those discussions. We agree that so-and-so from this political party will lead and so-and-so will, you know, occupy these cabinet positions, what have you. shouldn't there be a timeline, you know, to say no one is allowed to sort of decide one morning that I'm going to get out of this coalition agreement because I'm not happy with, you know, so-and-so and, you know, what have you. Like, for instance, let's say, shouldn't there be, let's say, a one-year, you know, fixed term to say no one will be allowed to exit, you know, that agreement?
Yeah. So I do think that a minimal sort of prevention of exit framework would definitely be something that, you know, panel legislation should consider, because we do need to change the system.
Yeah.
And that there are other things in this regard. So, for example, assuming that parties have actual legitimate grievances with their current coalition agreements, there could be, you know, coalition dispute resolution mechanisms that are in place. But, you know, in legislation must say that each agreement that is published must include this.
Yeah.
And that. So, you know, there are these ways to find a way. I know that the DA is currently proposing legislation on the issue of coalitions. And some of the ideas there are, you know, pretty good, like increasing the window in which you can negotiate and publish agreements. Other parts of it, I think, are less likely to pass parliament, because some of them are things like introducing a threshold to who gets parliamentary or local council representation based on the voting proportion. And, you know, if you're targeting smaller parties already in parliament, then, you know, you're not really giving yourself the best chance of getting your own legislation through. So I'd hope that some parts of this, maybe the ANC could use its majority to get in place, like, you know, that minimal framework thing and publishing the agreements. But, you know, the DA legislation as it currently stands, I think, has very little chance of passing.
Sure.
So time frame wise, also in terms of where we're heading to the country. In our Sona preview and our Sona statement on after the speech, we said that, you know, you should try and do this as soon as possible. Because, you know, 24 is next year. Now I'm not sure whether that's actually going to happen or not.
Sure.
But there's no doubt in my mind, but that by the 26 local elections, there needs to be something in place, because it goes back to what I said at the beginning. Democracy relies as much on the citizens' confidence in the institutions themselves as the actual institutions. And currently, with regards to coalitions, citizens' confidence is low, and the framework itself is just ineffective.
Absolutely.
So this is one way that the president can, you know, move things a bit forward. And it's also a powerful acknowledgement that the political reality of the country is changing.
And when one looks back to the previous local government elections, the outcome thereof, you know, it was basically, you know, a sign of ordinary members of the public saying, you know what, we've lost all trust, you know, and we don't want any one of you guys, you know, to get an outright majority. So we'd rather prefer that you guys all work together to solve our issues. Now, looking at all this instability that we've been seeing in Ekurhuleni, Joburg, even Tshwane, what do you think is going through the electorate's mind ahead of 2024? Because they've basically given them a mandate, right, in the previous elections to say, we want you guys to work together to better our lives.
Yeah. Frustration, anger. In some mooring respects, apathy. What's the point of voting if we voted in this way and, you know, they're just not doing anything? And we already saw that in the local elections anyway, because it was a very low turnout election. Anger, frustration, apathy, and all entirely legitimate. One thing I'm concerned about is, you know, speaking as a young person myself, and this relates to the thing of, you know, demographically, the attitude is different. You've only really known one party in power, and so you don't feel the same loyalty necessarily. But, you know, there have been public surveys that shows that younger people are also increasingly interested in potentially non-democratic alternatives. So there was a survey done just after the July 2021 riots where it asked, if you know you gave up your right to vote, but you were guaranteed effective basic service delivery, basic fighting crime, and that eliminating corruption, so just effective government, would you consider giving it up? And about half of South African, just under half South Africans said, yeah, we'd, we'd consider it. And that's high up from just 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And that percentage was high among young people. They already vote at lower levels, and you know, they're already increasingly skeptical about the system. If political parties are unable to find a way to make them feel included in the system and show that they can make things work, then they face the risk of the system itself coming under threat, because the young people, the future of the country, just don't really believe it's an effective way to do things for them.
Sure, and that should be worrying. I mean, when one consider the, you know, the future of the country, because already it looks bleak.
It is, and especially so when you think about how many successive generations South Africans sacrificed to get us to democracy. If the very people who are meant to benefit from that, young people, no longer believe in that system, then that's a very worrying sign for that system. And that's something that political parties do need to be aware of. And trying to tap into that by becoming populist or whatever is also playing a dangerous game. It will lead you to, you know, the sort of thing that we would have wanted to avoid 30 years ago.
Yeah. Now, earlier we spoke at length about, you know, the service delivery challenges that the country is facing. And I'm sure many South Africans out there only want to see a solution. What would that solution be, according to you? How do we turn around issues of governance, you know, starting from national, all spheres of government?
Yeah. So, you know, before we get on to how to improve, one thing that will provide a good indication of how far the country's come or how much it's regressing is that the census results from last year will be published later this year.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually got, at the municipal level, which is the main place that's responsible for service delivery, we haven't got stats on that since 2016, 2017. So that's quite a while now. And since then, COVID's happened.
Yeah.
There's been this inflation last year as well. This has had a meaningful impact on people's lives. So having an idea of that will give us an idea of, you know, whether the system is actually really working or not.
Because
I can say that, you know, it was not working well between 2008 and 2016, but well before that. But after that, while I can say that I think that it's not been working well, I don't know for sure. So that will be an important guide on that. In terms of what needs to be improved. Some of it is just as simple as improving and maintaining infrastructure, making sure that you have the actual, you know, engineering facilities and logistics to actually deliver things to people.
Yeah.
Political will is very important. Politicians are elected, whether it's local council level or higher level provincial kochtas or national kochta, need to make sure that they are driving to ensure that basic service delivery is provided for citizens.
Sure.
In terms of what can be done by the, you know, municipal managers in these offices, you know, making sure that you have the best people available to staff your offices, you know, they're financially capable of managing things, that they're not corrupt. That's all very important. So professionalization of public service plays a big role. But what also plays a big role there is that it's important for the, you know, managers themselves to, you know, be aware of what, be responsive to the, what the public actually want. You can't, you know, govern for people if you aren't aware of what they actually want and have no interest in that, and you just think my way or the my way. And that. So there needs to be a willingness to actually engage with citizens, because at the end of the day, that's who they're meant to be providing for.
And I suppose also, if you are in government, if you are a leader of whatever municipality, you need to at least get to a point where you get the buy-in, right, from the people that you're supposed to be serving in terms of, you know, revenue collection. You know, you need to get the buy-in to say to the people and report back, you know, on a more constant basis to say, this is how much we got, you know, in the form of a budget, and this is how much we've spent. And, you know, here's the proof. And I think that's what people, ordinary men on the street are actually looking for, transparency.
Yeah, transparency and accountability, which is the, you know, essence of a democratic way of doing things.
Yeah.
That's essential. You raise a good point about the rates. So it's not entirely just your leaders deliver for you.
Yeah.
You have to be a participant in the thing. You have to pay your rates on time or whatever. And at the same time, you hold these officials and politicians accountable for providing things for you. And I think that broadly people are quite reasonable in their expectations.
Absolutely.
I don't think they're expecting everything will be perfect tomorrow.
Yeah.
But it's about in my lifetime or in the next 5 years or in the next 2 years, am I seeing improvements? And currently, like I said, we'll get a clear idea with the census because that also has an element of what the public thinks, not only what they're getting but what they think about it. We'll have a better idea across the country. But, you know, I think just my general feel is that, they don't think that it's improving nearly as much as they thought it would be.
Now, interesting, just last week, I read a report about one of the most struggling municipalities based in the south of Johannesburg, Emfuleni local municipality. Now, I read a story there. They were interviewing some of the workers who had been on strike, I think, a week or two ago. So now, during that interview, the workers were actually admitting that they come to work, they report for duty every day. Come end of the month, they get paid for doing nothing. And the job that they are supposed to be doing is being outsourced. I mean, that's another problem among the many problems faced by these municipalities.
Yeah, outsourcing of jobs and responsibilities is a problem. One thing that the AG has been talking about increasingly in recent years is that municipalities are spending a lot of money on independent consultants or outsourcing and that, and for very little gain. And, you know, improving these things, it's tricky. It means that municipalities have to change their behavior, that the guardrails against these things are also stronger. The other thing is it's more of a democracy issue. You have set expectations as a citizen about who's dealing with these things.
Absolutely.
You don't necessarily know who's being consulted or where it's being outsourced to. And so there's concerning lack of transparency there. What we saw at the national level, especially state capture, is that there are all these actors who the public were unaware of basically for years. So, they were aware of the big guys, big players who were responsible for a lot of it. But, you know, a lot of these other ancillary people, they had no real clue until the, you know, commission started looking at these things. So, that also needs to be looked at.
And now when one looks at the politics of the country and when one looks at the internal factional battles in the ANC as the governing party over the years, how much of an impact has that had on the governance of the country, you know, on service delivery?
A major impact, because what the ANC also currently lacks is, you know, any sense of unifying elder figures who can sometimes step in just to prevent factions. For example, around the time of the ANC conference, I was reading up a lot on the previous conference. And, you know, before, around the time of the 91 conference, there was going to be a big struggle between Mbeki and Chris Hani for the deputy position.
Yeah.
And what the ANC was then able to do was go to Walt Sisulu and ask him, you know, can you step in to prevent us being split at this critical point in our history and the country's history, where we think we can actually do something. And he was willing to step in for a few years. And that prevented that struggle. It currently lacks any ability to do that. Anti-factionism adds to coalition issues, adds to just a whole host of problems where the line of effective decision-making is slow. So the president can't really, push for effective reforms in place because he hasn't got the minister in place because he's waiting for the NEC to make a decision. That takes long. That means that people have to wait longer for the actual decisions to be taken by the officials, whether it's a municipal manager or the high-level DGs. They have to wait now, and that means that, you know, it already takes time to implement things, but you've just delayed how long it takes to make the actual decision that even gets you to the point of implementation.
Yeah.
So it has a massive impact. I think I saw a report about something that was said by one of the ministers last year about how there's also, you know, around 30 to 40% of water that has been wasted somewhere in the system. Resolving that problem, you know, requires a chain of decision making and authorization and making sure that the, you know, the things actually funded to deal with this problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're spending so much time thinking about cabinet reshuffles or anti-factionalism, then you already lost time in responding to the problem itself.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, you reminded me of actually, you know, the importance of starting to fix things that look small, but in the end, you know, they will make a huge difference. For instance, you drive around here, wherever in Joburg, how many streets have blocked drains? We are currently faced with a situation of, you know, heavy downpours, which then leads to localized flooding and stuff. And in fact, even the weather desk has been warning for months now to say, you need to prepare yourselves, right, for above normal rainfall during the, you know, summer rainfall season. But it doesn't look as if there's been a lot of preparation, you know, put in place ahead of this rainy, you know, season that we are currently experiencing, considering also where we come from last year, the KZN disaster. I'm told that there are also still bridges or parts of infrastructure that remains unfixed.
No, there. And, you know, corruption and political chaos means that these problems are even harder to deal with.
Yeah.
So what is also interesting in the president announcing a state of disaster, for instance, was he said, no, the AG will be there to monitor spending. That's already recognition that corruption and irregular spending is a problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in previous years, you'd never have imagined the president would say, you know what, we're saying that this person must come in to monitor.
Yeah.
You're recognizing that there's a problem. And that, but, you know, moving, for example, to the city of Joburg, last year, especially when there was all that chaos around the unsuccessful motions of no confidence and the court rulings and that, there was a 2 billion rand, I think, the Development Bank of South Africa loan that was being held up that could have, you know, speeded up the dealing with some of these problems and ensuring that, you know, there's funding for these various programs and that. And it was actually caught up in the entire mess because part of what was used for some of the motions of no confidence was, you know, voting down that DBSA loan. So that couldn't be approved because they were trying to figure out who'll actually run the council itself. So, you know, as much as the weather forecasts might be good or the workers on the ground are actually able to fill these things, they can't do it if they're not being paid. And that, and you know, the politics, it, at the end of the day, it just goes back to politics and corruption in a lot of these cases.
Sure. Well, on that depressing note, Pranish, I want to say thank you so much for coming through. And just perhaps as a parting shot, what would your message be to residents, politicians, political parties going forward and ahead of the 2024 general election?
Yeah, so you mentioned the depressing part, so perhaps I'll try and be a lot more uplifting. You know, when considering your place in modern South Africa, it's also important to think of what would your forefathers and foremothers and forebears have given up to just have your rights to sit as we are discussing
this. Sure.
Wouldn't have been possible or, you know, be able to protest without necessarily going to jail so long as you followed the law. What would they have given up? Those people, you know, in all those marches and some of them who were massacred and that. What would they have given up to be in your position? What were they really fighting for? And it was partly this, partly the ability to have this
the right freedom
to actually solve these problems. You might choose not to solve the problems, but they fought for your right to solve them. And you know, you can honor them by trying to solve them, by making that effort, by being an active citizen or political party that's, you know, looking out for interests and not just short-term stuff, by being a leader who is willing to make tough decisions and effectively govern. It's all a part of it.
Okay. No, thank you so much, Pranish, for coming through. Really, really appreciate your time. Folks,
thanks.
That was Pranish Desai from an organization called Good Governance Africa. He was here to help us dissect, you know, some of the governance issues that we face as a country. You know, we spoke about, you know, local government, the mess that is there, you know, what the role of provincial government can be, and as well as that of national government, of course. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in as well. And until we meet again next week, between now and then, you take good care of yourselves. Cheers.